The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea. Brought to you by the Australian Institute of Management WA. We inspire better workplaces.
We know that more than 100 people were shifted from Fremantle's makeshift tent city over the weekend and placed into temporary crisis accommodation. There are more than 15,000 people on WA's social housing waitlist, and there are fears we're heading for an even greater homeless crisis come March when the rent moratorium is lifted. It sounds like the perfect storm. Joining me now is the CEO of St Bart's, who provide accommodation and services for those in need, Sam Drury. Good morning.
Good morning, Ben.
And so what are you experiencing in your organisation right now?
So what we've noticed over the recent months, and especially with the impact of COVID, is the growing number of people that have been reaching out to ourselves for access to support. So we get over 186 inquiries a month just asking for whether we've got vacancies or things like that. But given we're operating at well above sort of 95% in terms of our occupancy level, we are very limited with the capacity that we can offer. The other thing that we've been noticing with the changing around the rental vacancy rates is actually the length of time it takes for us to help people move into stable or long-term accommodation. Our goal per our contract is about 3 months, but the average stay is actually closer to 7 to 9 months before people are actually able to move into that long-term accommodation, and that's with us working with the Department of Communities around prioritising them onto the wait lists and things like that. So it's definitely challenging times, and that lack of stock in the sector is definitely making it much, much harder to be able to support the people that need it.
So in the same way that people who might be looking at getting a new rental property are having to get in a long queue with lots of other people going for the same property, that's having an impact on people who are homeless and are even more at risk if they can't access properties.
That's correct. So, you know, we have multiple forms of accommodation. So we do have social housing. So sometimes we have vacancies and that can help. But we also provide transitional accommodation, which really allows people to find that right accommodation for them. But they are competing if they go into the private rental with all of those people that are trying to access it, which really makes social housing the only true viable option for them. And with the limited stock, you mentioned 15,000 people on the wait list. And although most of the people we support do tend to be up on the priority list, it is still taking 7 to 9 months to enable us to find accommodation with them.
And that 7 to 9 months, what are people doing during that period?
So normally some people might be actually able to find some work and secure, and certainly a lot of the increase around the construction activity has helped with people finding work, which enables them to clear some of their debt. They do start linking with their community around resolving some of the traumas, and you'll have seen a lot about the supported accommodation being key. So they start working through some of those challenges, but really they're every day trying to find that accommodation and making the most of it, happy, because when they're with us they do have a roof over their heads, unlike those that we saw over the weekend. But it's not the ideal accommodation, and it's certainly not their permanent home. So they make the most of it, but really a lot of them would be ready and able to move out much, much quicker.
Now, do you think the general public has a very narrow view of people who are homeless?
I think so, although during COVID that did start to change. I think having the groups that got together in the tent cities probably started moving that perspective back to the worst side of the behaviours when you do get big groups. But a lot of people, I think, realised, and probably through their own personal circumstances, that it can just be one or two small events that happen that suddenly finds you in a scenario where you don't have a home. And I think the concern around the COVID moratorium and the lifting of that that's going to happen in the next few months really does put a lot of fear for people, coupled with the JobKeeper and JobSeeker, you know, reductions, is going to put a lot of rental stress on people, and may well only have them a couple of steps away before they find themselves without a home too.
Now, if that's what you're hearing from people at St Bart's, is that correct?
That's correct.
And so as an organisation, what are you doing to prepare for that? Is there anything that you can do? Are you starting to put plans in motion?
So we, as I said, are at over 95% occupancy. So where we have some, you know, additional stock or stock that we'd created and put as an isolation unit for COVID, we've been working with the department and other agencies or ACCO organisations to see whether there's some funding to increase the capacity. And that way, we do have a longer term development opportunity at some of our sites or one of our key sites that we're starting a process around what might we put on that site. But that's a couple of years off before that would be through to fruition. So we're certainly trying as much as we can, but within the stock that we have and within, you know, the capacity, we're pretty much already fully occupied. So that's the challenge for us. We certainly try and move people into stable as quickly as we can, because then that also creates capacity for people to move into our accommodation at least, and then we can start working with them if it's in transitional or if it's the long-term social housing, then they've got that secure tenancy.
Now, we briefly mentioned the makeshift tent city down in Fremantle, which has really exposed the homelessness issue again. Now, I'm curious to know, what was your thinking over the weekend when you saw the government go in, pack up everybody, put them on buses? Did you welcome it? Did you think that was a strategy that's fraught?
It's a difficult one, and I don't think there ever is a right or wrong answer. I think having such a large group of vulnerable people together was creating concerns and issues around violence. It wasn't the right level of support in there, and it was also causing public safety concerns for those around. So it's never an easy option when these were, and I definitely would support the other agencies put out a media statement around this is not the right solution. At least they've been housed temporarily, and my absolute hope is that they are receiving the right level of support into those hotels, and I'm sure they are, to be able to take the next steps to work through where they're going and what they're looking at. It's a difficult one.
And what sort of options are there for these people? They're in their hotel. Looks like they've got maybe a week or so in that accommodation. After that, what happens?
Well, this is where that wait list and the lack of social housing and the availability is going to make it really challenging to be able to find what those options are. But I know the department has been working through all of the agencies around what stock or capacity might be available. We sat as part of the Lord Street Tent City, being the very, you know, the first one and close to our facility here, every week meeting, looking at and meeting with the people to see if any of our stock or vacancies could have been suitable. We've put forward some options around whether or not we could increase capacity through some additional funding and things like that. And I know all of the other agencies are doing that, and that's what will be happening, to see what's available, to have something that's a bit longer term for what they're looking at.
Like, it doesn't take me very long talking to you this morning to, I guess, appreciate what a complex problem this is. What are the long-term solutions for Western Australia?
I think when it comes to some of the long term, and you know, we've received some amazing philanthropic and support from organisations such as BHP who have invested in the sector, but you know, I think we know housing stock and social housing is a key part to the solution. If we don't have somewhere for people to live, that's a challenge. But it's also about ensuring that right wraparound support services are in place, especially when people have been sleeping on the streets for significant lengths of time and they've got the trauma and the challenges that they've had for many, many years. That's where our BHP-funded Reconnecting Lives program provides that wraparound support when they move in, and that's where they succeed and they stay in that accommodation, because it's not just giving them a property, it's ensuring they've got the right level of support. And that's the housing first approach when they're in there, to enable them to succeed and you know, be successful. And I think that's through continued collaboration with the government and the agencies and the sectors, and having all of the government departments working together, both the mental health, housing and the Department of Communities, in terms of each of its elements, because it's a three-way pronged approach to be able to get that success. So wraparound services is an absolute must, and and stock, and suitable stock that is available for people to have those choices.
You mentioned stock of public housing. Premier Mark McGowan was asked about that after the Tent City eviction, and he said that the McGowan government had inherited a lot of unlivable stock from Colin Barnett, and that was a big part of the problem at the moment. And I heard that, and I thought, well, you know, that's 4 years ago. Do you buy that as an excuse? Do you think that's reasonable now, after all of these years that he's been in office, to say that that's the issue?
I think there is certainly the quality. Some of the housing stock, like a lot of those sorts of assets, have been allowed to degrade. And I know through SHRP and various other programs, they do have a significant investment to look at increasing, you know, the suitability of that stock. But then there's also the actual amount of stock. And that's where the 15,000 people, where will they, you know, on that wait list need access to additional stock? But I think as a sector, and I spoke briefly around our development opportunity that we've got around one of our, you know, properties, and we will be looking to come up with innovative solutions to increase stock that may well be in partnership. And I think that's one of those ways that we can look at. So it may not be all government funded. We can come up with a model that may well be a joint sort of funding approach to allow capacity to grow as we go forwards. And I think some of those innovative solutions will enable the increase in stock that's needed.
And then if we look forward to March, when the rents are probably going to be hiked, and then, you know, job seeker, job keeper is going to run out, and if you're already at a capacity and you might be turning people away, I'm curious to know, like, how does that feel when your job is helping people and you know that you can't?
It's absolutely terrible. And I think all of us as the sector, that's what is our biggest fear. And I think, how can we keep people in the homes that they are today? So avoiding people becoming homeless is such a key part, and that's where those fear over the rental moratorium and those changes. So I would strongly encourage the modelling and thinking about the levels of support to enable people to remain in their homes, because that will avoid the health crisis that does happen when people become homeless and are homeless for a long time. And so that's the fear, because we can't help more people. Or we can only help very small, limited numbers of people, and that demand is going to exceed it. And I know the other agencies feel the same.
And this issue with the Freo Tent City has sort of temporarily taken the spotlight off homelessness in the CBD. How do you see that at the moment? Has that changed? There's been a change in local government, and the issue of homelessness was a big part of that. What is the current situation?
We unfortunately still have the significant numbers of people without a home that are in the city. You know, we did see it at the Lord Street Tent City. There are still people living there now, although the numbers did reduce considerably over time. And working through that collaborative joint group, several of those people have been housed and found accommodation. But every day, and I think everyone knows this, as you walk around, you do see people that obviously do not have a home. We are at capacity. The agencies that support people during the day are definitely at capacity. It's still the same challenge, but I do notice that, you know, the City of Perth are absolutely looking at how they can make changes, what they can do to provide support. They are looking at funding safe night spaces and things like that, but that's only temporary solutions. It's not the long-term support and housing that's needed.
Yeah, lots of work still ahead. CEO of St Bart's, Sam Drury, thanks for joining me on the show today.
No problems. Thanks, Ben.
Now, what do you think the answer to homelessness is? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Drop me a line at thewestlive@wanews.com.au.